Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we've had a rough week here in the purebred dog world. And for those of you who are unaware, we are going to be discussing some really difficult topics today. And there's some pretty major trigger warnings. So heads up. And if this is something that you're uncomfortable with, or you would like to listen to it at another time, this is your heads up on that. Pure Dog Talk is proudly sponsored by Trupanion, medical insurance for the life of your pet. This year, give your buyers the gift of peace of mind with a special go-home day offer from Trupanion. This offer provides puppies with immediate coverage so they're protected should they get into mischief in their new homes. Trupanion covers pets against unexpected accidents and illnesses with no payout limits, helping ease the financial burden when a pet gets sick or injured. Even better, Trupanion is able to pay the veterinarian directly at the time of checkout, which means less out-of-pocket for your buyers. You can get this special offer for your buyers as part of the Breeder Support Program. It's completely free to join and available for breeders in the US, Canada, and Australia. Getting started is quick and easy. Just follow the link on my partner page at puredogtalk.com to get started. So with some recent incidents that have been brought to light in the purebred dog world, everybody's asking kind of what the American Kennel Club is doing. And my guest today is Pam Bruce. And Pam is a 32-year veteran of the Toronto Police Department, where she was a sex crimes investigator. She was also Canada's first acknowledged expert in this field. And Pam is the individual who has trained all of our AKC reps and staff and board members already. And her presentation that we're going to sort of highlight today, not this exact presentation, but a similar one, is going to be available to everyone in Canine College starting this month. We can all be empowered by knowledge. And the knowledge that Pam has to share is what is going to make us all more able to handle the situations that we've been handed. So, Pam, welcome. I really appreciate your time.
Hi, nice to see you. Thank you, Laura. So, as you said, just a bit of a caveat, I actually have no images in this presentation. It's very much hopefully suited for everyone in the fancy. The other presentation that I did, we'll talk about towards the end of this talk, and then I'll speak to that as we go.
Very good.
So the idea today of vulnerable victims, it's reared its head again with our community. And I think this time, for some reason, more than ever, people are willing to step up, which is a phenomenal concept. The two worlds colliding, I always get made fun of that I'm a judge and a police officer, but of different cloths. So the idea of both worlds, it's interesting. I've always gone to the dog shows, participated and judged to get away from this other world. And now here we are.
Yeah.
So just the bare tacks of it. I mean, this doesn't need to be stated, but I think it's very important to our listeners. What's a dog show? So technically it's a confirmation competition to evaluate breeding stock. We all know that. AKC is the registering body for that event. And they promote and sanction events, including confirmation dog shows. So the reality is, in our dog show world, it's a competition, but within a microcosm of society. But it is our society. It's our family sport. It's our passion. It's our tribe. And therein lies the talk for today. Again, the parallel of society and dog shows. If we think of the greats and the famous in society, it's oftentimes entertainers of some sort. And the Walk of Fame is the easiest thing that I could think of to make that analogy to dog shows, handling top awards, and the best in show movie itself. It's a satire, but it's an interesting take on our world. So how do we take that and what we deem as our passion and as our tribe and our love? And how do we ensure that anyone within our community, it does not become for all of us collectively a walk of shame? And that's what we're going to talk about today. So again, the dog show is a microcosm, a reflection of our society as a whole. And as we know, long gone are the days where you put pen to paper to communicate with someone. It's instant. I would hazard a guess that it's less than 6 degrees of separation at this point, connected by dog shows and the internet. And it makes it for literally a very small world, both good and bad.
Yeah.
So the elephant in the room, why are we really here today? And I've heard this on social media for the entire week. People saying it's been a day. People saying it's been a week. No, it's been a lifetime. And that is the reality of anybody with time in this sport and what that looked like growing up compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
The offense itself of sex assault, fair tax, the USA definition of sex assault, the term sex assault means non-consensual activity. And it's against prescribed acts by federal, tribal, or state law. But it includes when the victim lacks the capacity to consent. And I think often when these discussions are coming up, I don't think it's apparent to people that a vulnerable person or a youth under the age of 18 does not have the capacity to consent. So does that make them persons in need of protection? Sex assault itself may, and it's not a complete list, but it could be partial, it could be one, it could be all, but an intimate sexual contact with a person without their consent. And again, that young person does not have the capability of offering consent, the same as somebody that's vulnerable. Accompanied by force or even threat of force includes obviously any of the acts described there. But another misnomer is it's not for sexual gratification of an offender. It's all about, for the most part, power and control. Is there some dynamic in some cases of sexual attraction? We could argue this forever, and we do amongst sex assault investigators, whether there is a level of attraction, whether it's opportunistic. But the big problem for us and our sport is it's living in the gray areas. And that comes from non-reporting. The first time an offender was caught is not the first time they offended. And when you speak to the experts about this, they say on the low end, the average of sex assaults that have been committed before an offender has been even on their radar is at least 7. So let me just drill down a bit with vulnerable victims. A vulnerable person can be identified as someone who belongs to a group within our society, so think of dog shows, that is either oppressed or more susceptible to harm. Youth, again, anyone under the age of 18 years or older who has an impairment due to physical, mental, or emotional function. One who is unlikely, unable, or incapable to report grooming, sexual abuse, physical abuse, or neglect situations. Now, let it not be lost on anyone that the offender is the one that chooses the victim. And it's often for that exact reason that they are looking that that person has lack of capability. And if they do have capability or someone to assist with that reporting, will they be believed? We must report on their behalf or assist them to do so. And that is from every level of our society as well, adults included. The offender. Now, these are just brief stats to throw up, but I want people to understand the dynamics. So there's the population of the United States, 750,000 registered sex offenders. So what the bigger issue for us and for society is, what about the undetected offenders? Due to non-reporting, we don't know what we don't know. Child victims know their offender 94% of the time. The most underreported group is a female offender. And I won't get into that today, but there's definite reasons why. And let it be said as well that anyone can be an offender and anyone can be a victim. If I was to ask a room, even when I taught police officers or the judiciary or any government agency, if I say to them, what does an offender look like? Even a police officer who does this for a living will explain to me about a masked man who is dressed all in dark clothing, always with a weapon, takes a victim in the cover of night, in the bushes, and as I said, there's always a weapon. But that truly is a stereotype, a CSI factor, a factor as a result of media, whatever that may be, but it's still in the back of everybody's minds of what these monsters look like. The reality, again, Dog Show 101, and I thought this statement was so fitting. Me explaining that it isn't girls help girls, it's girls protect girls, because I could hate her with my whole heart, and I still wouldn't leave her alone in a room with some creepy guy. And that secret code, or the way we grew up with people looking after people, women looking after women, I think it's still to this day very commonplace.
Yeah.
And I want to say off the cuff as well that sex offenses and sex offenders are not new. The outcry that we have now within our community, it's because of the recent arrests, because there's more public awareness, because of social movements that we see.
Me too.
Me too. And the social media and that connection. But sex offenders, if the offenses are reported, sex offenders are identified. If they're convicted, it's a sex offender registry. If there are several convictions, or not even convictions, but information that the police have, those cases can be built to designate sex offenders as dangerous offenders and long-term offenders. Mm-hmm. And that's where you see conditions that are so stringent and these people have to abide by. Some are monitored more tightly than others, some through devices, some through their own sureties and their own recognizance. But there are conditions on release. Sex offenders, this was published in 2014, and it's actually a very interesting list to be able to explain to people what some of those traits are. And this is based on arrests and interviews with experts of the offenders. So obviously I'm not going to go through all of these points because, as I said, they could have one, they could have all, they could have very little. But what I want you to take from this more than anything is one, cognitive distortion. So rationalizing their abuse is actually helping or protecting a child. Mm-hmm. But the second point, and I'll speak to this further, is putting themselves in places and situations where youth are present. Now, saying that again, putting themselves in situations where youth are present, they engage the youth, and they're often in positions of trust and authority. These positions are clearly held by those as well who are very safe to deal with and have the best intentions and excellent skill sets. So obviously, everyone cannot be painted good or bad with the same brush. But what concerned me almost more than anything this week is the idea of a certificate, knowledge, and control is power. Offenders educate themselves to know what we as police investigators do, whether it's through courses, certifications, contacting police investigators directly in the middle of a case to offer some information or ask for information. They sit in criminal cases in court. They watch crime shows. They speak to each other in jail. They, like everyone else, watches the daily news and what goes on. They know from public record and from the internet what and who and how the regulations are with the sex offender registry. So not only is knowledge power and assists us as people that genuinely want to help and assist victims, but it assists the offenders to go unnoticed. And I mean unnoticed by in plain view. They're hiding in plain view. And whether that's through social media, cell phones, think of every person at the dog show, children at the dog show, for safety for their parents to protect them, they have a cell phone in case they need to call the parent, parent needs to check in, or if they're all trained to dial 911, whatever that may be. But think about that as well with an offender who's gained the trust of that victim, exchanging messages, photos, videos, dialogue. The examples, as we talked about, or as I promised that I'd speak to, which are all not nefarious, but it's the idea of coaching, teaching, tutoring, medical, church, youth groups, even bus drivers. And I've done several investigations with people that are physically disabled and the drivers for their personal transportation. Again, the contact with those cognitive distortions for offenders alone through social media, online, through cell phone, and exchanging messages, photos, the offenders amongst themselves exchange collections, they exchange video, and they exchange live offending against children. That cannot be understated. When you look at this list, when someone says the attitude of that judge in the middle of the ring, or the attitude and the arrogance of that handler to walk in expecting to win, in every aspect of our sport and in every aspect of society, there are people with narcissistic personality disorders. Maybe the entire list, maybe just a few here and there. But the extreme to that being psychopaths. And there's a book called Snakes in Suits, and it speaks to psychopathy. All these characteristics, grandiose self, entitlement, lack of empathy, belittling of each other's, monopolizing the conversation, which I'm sorry, I feel like I'm doing right now.
That's your job right now. So you just monopolize away, honey.
Okay, good. Thank you. Fixation on appearance, on reasonable expectations, all of those, they're in the DSM-5, a medical diagnosis in regards to NPD. But we all know those people. Now, let's apply that to our people, to our dog show village. And please never, ever forget, anyone that hears this, is that, yes, these people are our village, but there are victims in our village and offenders in our village. And we know them, we love them, we believe we know their full being. And does anyone ever really know anyone? And that's a conversation that we have amongst ourselves at the time. But I almost feel sad in a way, but at the same time, it's a real internal struggle in my brain this week. I'm quite honestly surprised that so many people are shocked and dismayed by what they've heard. And I get it. Let me say that I understand the acts are horrific. Thankfully, up until recently and the arrests that were made last week, there was no one that we knew that were directly affected from the dog show. But the dynamics and the way that plugs in, whether it's exhibitors, breeders, owners, backers, a show vet, professional handlers, again, and I'll talk to you about this, but them being in a position of trust and authority, not only for our animals, but for our children, and the children being assistants, junior handlers, even peewees. Judges, again, another position of trust and authority. They have a badge on, not dissimilar to a police badge. They're readily identified and they're right out in front of you in public. The people that do all the work for the shows, the club members, vendors, photographers. It amazes me too, the amount of photographs the photographer takes, and they're loaded online and they say they could take 5,000 photos and they could publish 100. We don't know what is on that camera that doesn't get published. But the bigger issue that speaks to that is every single person, almost without exception, at a dog show has cameras right on their person. And what have they recorded? And what is on their phone? I don't know anybody that if their phone wasn't taken away from them, that their eye wouldn't start to twitch and they'd feel extremely uncomfortable. And
naked. That's just, you feel naked.
Exactly. And that's just people that have nothing to hide. The bigger issue, and it always, I don't want to say freaks me out, but it makes me mindful, is when we have the large events in the United States, especially, or Meet the Breeds, whatever that looks like, the amount of public that are coming and going through. If we were to be able to freeze at any time an event in New York City or an event in Orlando, and those people that run those events, my hat is off to them. They're incredible at what they do. And the guys in the orange that organize everything and run everything and assist with what goes on, all the way down to security. I often think about this just because this is, sadly, you're going to get a snippet of a bit of the way my mind works. But I always think, what if we could just freeze everybody in position and then let's highlight them in red, sex offenders in the building. I think people would literally go running out of the venue if they realized who's among us. And the position, save and except, that we have in trust and authority, the idea of parents and them being able to monitor their children. I mean, Laura, you and I've talked about this before. When we were kids, we would be thrown outside in the summer holidays. We were on a farm doing whatever. We were told to be back before dark or before the streetlights came on. Mm. And if our parents, except for thinking we could fly and throwing ourselves off buildings and you may need medical aid, but if our parents ever saw us, except drinking from a garden hose or running around doing what we were doing, they had virtually no clue where we had gone that day, what we had been up to, and we came home in one piece, and that was that. And that's what shocks me now with the idea that technically anybody could be speaking to your child on their phone, at that dog show, whatever that looks like. I'm truly grateful. I have a hard enough time worrying about my dogs and my nieces and nephews, my dog show family, and the kids that we raised growing up in dog shows. But the idea now of what parents and caregivers must face is terrifying.
Well, and Pam, I do want to put this in here, and I mentioned this to you before, but I do feel really strongly about this. The world is a scary place for a lot of us today, but in a lot of instances, and for a lot of us in the dog show world, myself included, dog shows were where I went to be safe.
Absolutely.
And I really, really, really want to ensure that they will continue to be a place where people can go to be safe and for them to not be afraid. And I really do believe that all the things that we can do to make sure that that remains a safe space for people who need it is really important.
It's hugely important.
Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
All right, crew, check it. The results are in, and 96 of the 100 top all-breed show dogs in 2023 are fed ProPlan. The high-performance food is made with 30% protein and 20% fat to fuel the metabolic needs of an active, keenly motivated show dog while maintaining lean muscle. The owners and handlers of these top champions choose to feed ProPlan because it delivers concentrated nutrition to optimize oxygen metabolism for increased endurance, a pivotal part of campaigning a show dog. ProPlan promotes nutrition for joint health and mobility and for healthy skin and coat. The ease of feeding one of the ProPlan All Life Stages formulas that provide complete and balanced nutrition for puppies to senior dogs is an added bonus. Try ProPlan and see why more owners and handlers of top show dogs choose it. Visit purina.com/ProPlan/dogs to learn more about the number one dog food of show dog owners and handlers in 2023.
I was lucky enough to be raised by a grandmother who literally took over for two young parents. And I know I was a handful. And we'll speak about how we were all raised a little bit further into this and all the positives of it. And that's a bit of the concern with this topic, because I have to show you the bad before I can show you how we appreciate the good and what that looks like going forward. And it's a progression.
Yeah.
And instead of it being a lecture, a dialogue, and interjecting someone's beliefs and what our reality is perfect. What is grooming? And I always laugh because I spent the first 40 years of my life growing hair, and I'm spending the last, however, 40 years plus of my life pulling hair out with two different breeds of dogs. But the idea of an Afghan, when you think about grooming, when someone says to me about grooming, it doesn't matter how much training I've had, I always think about an Afghan being put up on the table and coming out glorious at the end. And again, the parallels with that with our dog world. But the idea of grooming behaviors when it comes to the United States title is the idea of a perpetrator. And as I said, in Canada especially, we call them offenders, but perpetrator is another form for it. The idea of forming relationships with children and the vulnerable, and what methods and what points would be needed to assist parents. I think the main ones are the ones that I've highlighted here. Forming relationships with children to begin with. If you see an adult and they're really not friendly with a set of parents, but they're spending a lot of time around their children, I periscope up right away. I want to know why. Or if it's somebody vulnerable, someone disabled, if they're helping them, that's wonderful. But is there a line that should not be crossed? Which is the next point, testing boundaries. Perpetrators will try to test boundaries on your child's comfort level. Now, that happens with adults at the dog show as well. A man walking up or anybody walking up behind me and putting their hand on the back of my neck or my shoulder. It is every instinct I have to grab them and pull them over my shoulder or to turn on them. I do not like my back anywhere to anyone. And obviously in dog shows, that's impossible. But the idea of a comfort level, I don't even have that comfort level, let alone a child. And you will see with adults and children alone, someone walk up and put their hand on someone's back. Are they typically more of a tactile person? If they are, you can justify it in your mind, but you're still aware of it.
Right.
The best idea that I can think of is in coaching. Growing up, we had a volleyball coach, and she was shorter than all of us. And if you were in trouble, she literally would squeeze your shoulder and pull you off the basketball or volleyball court. And you knew the minute you saw her eyes and those fingers drilled into your shoulder, you didn't challenge her. But the thing with her was she pulled you to the side of the court, spoke to you with what she needed to, empowered you with what she wanted you to know, the yin to the yang, and you were sent back in. That's not what happens in these cases. Touching as well. People automatically think of genitalia. It is that shoulder rub right out in the open or the brush by. I was judging at a dog show, and I've told this story before, and I was getting ready to judge in a very large event in the States. And I watched a certain person stand and get their armband ringside. I then watched that person bend over the table behind young women coming up for armbands and elastics and checking schedules. And that person bent over at least three, if not four times that day to look at a catalog or to get an extra rubber band or whatever. And that person saw me watching them. And I was very overt with my eyes. And the, as we've talked about before, the resting bitch face, and in this case, the death stare, where they knew that I knew, and I was observing what was going on. And I waited, and I knew it was going to happen. I did not go to that person. I was taking photos at the end of the day, and that person walked up and said to me, "Did you have something you wanted to discuss?" And I said, "Absolutely, walk this way." And we had a very candid conversation, and the person appreciated my thoughts. I am now the villain in their story, but my point was made very loud and very clear that day. There were no lines crossed, but it was extremely obvious to me what their mindset was. And that's, as an investigator, what happens. The offense itself, it has to be deemed from a complainant, but it speaks to the mindset of the offender. Whether it's even something, as I already said to you, about death staring this person, that's intimidation. Not one word was said, but my view and my perspective was extremely clear. Mm-hmm. Sharing sexually explicit material. There's an idea of grooming, and don't think that this is just grooming. Say someone shared a video that was inappropriate of some act. It doesn't even have to be with anybody else. It could be a person with a sex act for themselves. It could be imagery. It could even be listening to something. It does not matter. If it's sexually explicit and it makes that person uncomfortable, it's an offense. More so, the problem for the red flag with parents and with those of us that are trying to protect the vulnerable is the secret communication, where if somebody discloses, you will very quickly see in any aspect of society, people taking divisions and sides. And would somebody like me do something like that? When I'm in a loving, caring relationship, I think the world of my partner, I have a great life, I have status in the dog world, I have status in the social world, the real world. That does not mean a thing when it speaks to the mindset of the offender. Going forward, we need to make a commitment to our vulnerable and support the systems responsible for the prevention, detection, reporting, investigation, and prosecution of child abuse. I am going to be very frank here, and I really have no consideration if this is not a popular opinion. I am so disappointed over the years of people that think discussing what an offender is doing within our community is good enough. Having these discussions on social media is good enough. We need to report, report, report. And I'm not saying to report false allegations. I'm saying we need to ensure that we're collaborating and cooperating with the best intentions of those people, the children and the vulnerable people within our dog shows and within our community. So what did we achieve today, hopefully? In 2024 and beyond, I really wish for our community that we promise to educate ourselves, but do the best for each other going forward, to support one another, to be that safe place without judgment. Ensure that reports are made and that our victims are supported. We know, and we've seen it on Facebook through Patty Proctor and Mary Duke's group with Safe Show and Safe Sport. I took this course myself. It's 90 minutes. I wanted to be able to speak to it because my phone, the last week, I've had to shut it off about, I usually try for at least 1 a.m. because it's nonstop about what should we do about this? How do we handle this? I need to report. I'm concerned about this person. We all are responsible for what that looks like going forward. But the idea of Safe Sport, I think it's an excellent resource for identifying potential abuse, how to address potential victims, and how to address their concerns. And that's why I didn't drill down on that as much in this talk today, because I think it's so perfectly stated in that Safe Sport lecture, and it's something that you can learn for another day as we go. Let me touch on this to end our talk. AKC, and I appreciate the finger pointing in all aspects, as I've said, but the American Kennel Club is a conduit for our sport and for our community. They are not a judge and jury to a successful case, a successful criminal matter. If the police are properly notified and a report's taken, and if the American Kennel Club is notified and a report is taken. I would hazard to guess, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek, because I believe strongly that there are safeguards and protocols in place. And let it be said, this is not reinventing the wheel. These safeguards have been in place forever. And that's what I'm talking about meeting halfway. We have to do our due diligence before authorities, whether it's the police or the American Kennel Club, has any traction to be able to deal with offenders. In 2023, I started lecturing because of Patty Proctor, Mary Dukes, and myself with an interview that they had done through one of our publications in regards to survivors of sex assault.
Right.
And Michael Hill was instrumental in that interview. And everybody working as a team on that approach was fabulous. But even the fallout from that first prong caused certain things to be put into place. And Dennis Sprung, who I have known through my mentor and as a mentor since literally I was 13 years old, so that may have been a few years ago at this point. But the fact is, knowing someone that long, I know where their heart stands and what they believe in. And Dennis put into play immediately asking me to speak to AKC lawyers. I spoke to Patty and to Mary Dukes and Tim Thomas and Dennis himself. I spoke to some subject matter experts, went back over with a Crown attorney and a member of the judiciary here and one in the States. And I developed a program in regards to sex assault and what that looks like within our dog community. And I started delivering that almost a year ago now. It's delivered to the board, to the reps, to the delegates, to the AKC staff so far. Dennis Sprung asked me at the end of last year when I would be available sooner than later to be able to do a presentation that would be suitable for Canine College. And that will be finished and presented. We're hoping in April. I have every belief that it will be. But the idea of AKC and their due diligence going forward, I think, as I said, we cannot overstate it enough of the fact that we absolutely have to put safeguards in place with our community, and the community and our dog show people have to meet halfway to be able to give law enforcement and the AKC the information that they require to go forward. So many people within our community are now Safe Sport certified. Is that going to be a mandatory requirement for junior handlers and all participants? I believe that is in the works. What I want to address, and it's not to be negative, but it's to be realistic and to keep people aware. This means that a person has passed that course, not that they're experts or even necessarily that they're a safe person. Hanging a shingle out, saying that you're certified in something, and I'm not suggesting or making that demeaning to anyone in our sport. What I'm talking about is the potential for offenders. Mm-hmm. Offenders within our community will take this course for optics, but also for knowledge. Knowledge is their power as well. For the right and for the good and for the people that are interested, it's an absolutely fantastic resource. Knowledge is power. We know better, so we do better. Reporting to an AKC rep, they are trained. They will do the best they can. I have made it abundantly clear to them and anyone else that needs to that you know how to get access to me and my phone number, and I will help as best I can. But these cases absolutely have to be reported to law enforcement. Is it comfortable? No. Is it something that we wish we didn't have to do? Absolutely. Is it necessary? No question. Let me just say as well, because I forgot to say this earlier, when you make a report and an allegation, you are not liable. If you are acting in good faith, it does not come on your shoulders to say whether or not the police are going to charge with an investigation after they see what they have. There's no blame put on a complainant. They're not the ones that decides. They're relaying the info. If some member of our community reports, there is no issue with the fact that they could be held liable or accountable for the information that's been provided to them. If anyone is acting in good faith and that information is shared, there is nothing that anyone should be concerned about to relay that information going forward. So going forward, 2024 and beyond, we need to encourage people that their voice matters and that they will, all aspects of our community will be supported. There's a page of a few resources that have come up and that we are aware of within our sport. Obviously, Google search and contacting local law enforcement or advocacy centers within our own area is invaluable. And if there's anything that I can do 24/7, and I mean that, I'm hoping that I can provide a safe space. So I appreciate being able to speak to you today. Thank you.
Pam, I'm really, really grateful for you joining us here on the podcast and having the opportunity and the ability to create this platform.
Thank you.
I'm glad that I can help in that way, and I appreciate your time tremendously.
Thanks very much. And I hope that if anybody gets one little bit of information today that will help themselves or a victim, and especially the historical sex assaults as well, please know that it's a safe place and a safe place to report and that you absolutely will be supported. So thank you so much for everything you do, Laura.
100%. Thanks a lot, Pam.
Take care.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.